called. She wanted to be called?
Yes.
All right.
So, we're reading the first part of the last space chapter in Dynamics, and then next week we'll read the rest of that chapter, and then we will move on to do some reading from Love of Knowledge, which focuses more specifically on the self. So, you know, what we're doing is getting ready. I mean, it's not that strongly structured, but the idea is that we really want to understand something about stories and how they're put together and how they arise and how they function, so that we can then turn to the specific story, which is the self, in terms of what we've been looking at. So that's how the next few weeks are going to be shaping up. At least that's how I've been thinking about it. So last week when I wrote the guidance essay, I made a distinction. I should look at that essay, but I made a distinction between the story that we tell and the story that we feel. I don't think I said it quite in those words. The way I usually like to say that is there's the told story, and then there is the lived story, which is pretty much the same when I say that. I have in mind something like the way things are, our understanding of how the world is for me. So it's me and my world. And that's the underlying story. You know, sometimes we tell a story about what we're doing, and it may come out of the lived story, or we may be fooling ourselves. You know, that happens too. Hi, who's that?
Hello?
Yeah?
Nanka.
Oh, hello, Nanka. Good. So we're just talking about stories and the lived story, which may not be the same as the story that we tell. During the week, I was reading something which used a kind of an interesting term in reference to schizophrenics. And it said that the term it used was double-entry bookkeeping. So I'm not sure everybody knows what that means. It basically means you keep two sets of books or two sets of accounts in your business or your personal life. And one is to show to the government when you pay taxes, usually, and the other one is the real situation. And apparently that term is used with regard to schizophrenics. They tend to tell two different stories, or actually it's better to say they tend to live two different stories. And so the kind of example is if somebody in a mental institution says that he's the king of England, he definitely regards that as his reality, as the story that he's the king of England, but at the same time, if you tell him to help clean the bathrooms, he'll do it. You know, so both things are going on at once, and in fact, that's part of what makes somebody schizophrenic. You know, I mean, that's a very complicated issue we don't need to get into, but most of us, most of the time, are basically living one story. Now, that doesn't mean that it's always the same story. We're living a story which actually may change from moment to moment. So, you know, we may take on a different self-image. That's one way that Rinpoche talks about it in other books that are not in the TSK series. But we all have kind of a sense of that. Our self-image may change depending on what happens to us and who we're with. So there are a lot of different possibilities for the kinds of stories that we live. But basically, it's one at a time. And I think that's what the book means. On page 59, Rinpoche writes that stories are the raw materials out of which thoughts shape identities, which is one of those wonderful sentences because it's so rich. I think he's basically saying that the story is when something comes along that needs to be identified. You say, oh, this is, you know, now I know what that object is, or more typically or more interestingly, this is what's happening. So, you know, right now we're having this telephone conference call, so we have that identity working. And we may have a thought about that, kind of a background thought. This is what's going on, this call. But that's all connected to an underlying story about what we're doing and how we come to be taking this class and what our identity is and our history and all of that. And if that story changed in some fundamental way, well, you know, we probably wouldn't be doing this call. But we certainly wouldn't be making sense out of it in the same way that we usually do. So it's an interesting, it's from a, if you were talking philosophically, you would say that this is kind of like idealism or mentalism in the sense that it's saying that what's real is our mental reality, not the physical reality. But it is not really idealism. I'm bringing that up just to discard that idea, because idealism says that what's real is our thoughts, what's real is our stories. And I think TSK makes very clear that our stories and our thoughts are not particularly real. Any claim about something being real is itself the outcome of an identity and relies on a story. So it's not that we're trying to say that what's really real is the stories, but we are saying that the reality we inhabit, our sense of what's real, grows out of or is constructed out of thoughts which depend on the story, which is kind of the raw material of the thought. I think that's all fairly clear from the reading, but I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page, as we say. Any comments at to that point? Any questions, comments? All very clear? Okay, well, I'm going to go on then. The thing that is really interesting, I think, is it's all interesting, but the approach that I want to investigate is the story of the story, or another way to say that is the story of subjectivity. You know, on the one hand, we say, well, we live in this world and the world is real, and then we have our identity, our self, and that's just as real, certainly, as the world we live in, and possibly more real. But the way that we think about stories themselves is actually we don't think about them. We ignore the fact that we are constantly telling stories. We really, what we're doing is when we tell a story, part of that story, and I will say tell a story because that's just the way we usually talk about it, but it's really better to talk about living a story, I think, because that's what's going on. We're another way you could talk about it is that we're inhabiting a story. In pretty much the same way that a character in a novel inhabits the story of that novel, you know. And when you see a film, when you see a movie, what happens in the beginning of a movie, and this is something I've always been really interested in, what happens in the beginning of a movie is that the director has to create the world for you. He has to show you the story that the characters inhabit. And so those first shots in a movie are always really important. As, you know, sometimes deliberately they don't make sense, but that's a more sophisticated approach. But the basic principle is you've got to set up the story because that's going to be the raw material. And I don't just mean, that's what I'm trying to convey when we talk about living the story, I don't just mean the plot, the narrative, like what's happening. What I mean is the situation. Where do the characters find themselves? What's their reality? What world do they inhabit? What's their past? Where are they headed? And what's the setting? Partly just the historical setting. So that those examples of stories and movies, I think, are helpful to give a sense of what we're talking about here, the story that we live or the story that we inhabit. But part of that story is always a claim that the story itself is the reality. And so Rinpoche doesn't use this word, but a word that I like to use is that's the story story. We're always telling the story or living the story of the story. And that's the part that we absolutely forget. So often in these chapters on space that we've been looking at, Rinpoche talks about how space disappears. And that is another way of talking about the same thing, it seems to me. But right now we're focusing on the story side. I think it's just as true to say that the stories disappear. And Rinpoche really says that at the very top of page 61 in this chapter, or if we go down to the bottom of page 60, it's probably a little bit better. He's talking about how the story eliminates the possibility of other stories. Right? And then he says, about the middle of that last paragraph on page 60, he says, when we proclaim the substantiality of the identities we identify, that's a kind of a tough phrase, but so when we say that the things that we label are real, when we proclaim the substantiality of the entities we identify, we apply this closing down dynamic to the activity of storytelling itself. Once we accept that we live in a world of substances, not as a story, but as fact, the world becomes fixed in its fundamentals. Its nature as a construct disappears from view. So, the fundamental story is that the story is not a story. That the story is the reality. And you know, sometimes people think that TSK can be kind of intellectual, right? And I you know, there are ways in which that's true. But it certainly is not just a theory about things. And I think this is a really good place to see that because, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, let's say there's this story. Let's say this whole version of how stories get constructed and identities get constructed and labels get applied. Let's say that's all true. Or maybe we say it's all false, although that wouldn't get us very far. But let's say it's all true. In itself, having this sort of cool explanation is not going to tell us anything. But that's not the right thing to say. It's not going to change anything for us. We'll walk around with a cool explanation, and maybe you know, when we're talking with a friend over dinner, we'll share this cool explanation, and we'll hope that they think we're cool people because we have this wonderful explanation. But it won't go much farther than that. But the point here is because we are living a story, because we're inhabiting a story, if we don't understand the story as a story, then we're trapped by it. We have no choice. So, you know, everybody, it's a kind of part of being a human being or even being a sentient being, maybe, that there are certain limits and certain frustrations we have and certain ways we wish the world were different and certain disappointments and certain wishes that we're worried will never come true or certain anxieties about things we're worried will come true or already are true and we wish they weren't, or you know, all of this stuff that's going on, all of this way in which our world is not really fulfilling or satisfying or as rich as we suspect that it could be. And ultimately, in the end, all of that traces to the story that we're inhabiting. And so one approach to this, and we talked about it a little bit last week, is to say, well, let's do the story differently. Let's retell the story differently so that we can start to relive the story differently. And in part, or that's one way of understanding what a lot of therapy is about, helping people to see that the stories that they inhabit are not accurate or could be changed in some way, or that there's some element they haven't been noticing. But in TSK, the approach is very different. The approach is not so much let's change our story, although that can be an interesting exercise. The approach is let's understand that the story is, in fact, the raw material out of which our reality is being constructed. And that includes the reality that says who we are and what our possibilities are. As soon as we see that the story is a story and that what's happening for us, the reality that's going on for us, is a story that we inhabit, then a whole new set of possibilities open up. And one way of talking about that, and certainly the chapter talks in this way, is to say that we recover the freedom of space. So there's a place on page 61 where Rinpoche says, let me find it here. Yeah, it's the italicized sentence on page 61. He says, skipping the first part, stories translate zeroless space into dimensionality. So dimensionality in this context basically means a world, in order to be real, has to have dimensions. It's kind of like mansions, but not really. It has to have dimensions. It has to have a particular shape. And then we can say, okay, the dimensions of this world, those are the dimensions of the world that I inhabit. And that's what stories do. They translate space into dimensions. So if you wanted to summarize the space section of dynamics, and certainly one very important element of the whole understanding of space that comes through in the TSK books, you could say that in time, space, and knowledge, we want to be able to restore space to the zeroless, to restore space to the freedom that comes before dimensions begin to operate. And one way to do that, that we've been looking at a little bit, is through the possibility of multiple dimensionality, and that comes up later in the rest of the chapter. But I feel like I've just been talking and talking. I'm not unhappy with what I've said. It seems to me to be accurate, but I sure do wish somebody had some questions or comments. So I'm going to stop right now and invite that.
Maybe I could just make a remark.
Sure.
It seems like it's very hard to tell a TSK story about yourself. So it's always kind of like it gels off on the periphery of something you'd like to establish, but it doesn't give you the opportunity to put yourself at the center of something.
Okay, so I think you're saying, if I understand you correctly, that's a kind of strength of the TSK vision. Is that right?
Yeah, and also a discomfort, maybe.
Okay.
It sort of discourages telling stories about yourself.
Yeah, that's right. So, the point is, you know, there are some exercises they're at the very end of Love of Knowledge, where the basic exercise says, instead of putting yourself at the center of experience, try putting time at the center of experience, or try putting space at the center, or knowledge at the center of experience. And that is a fundamental move that you would like to be able to make to really create to engage, let's say, the truth of this vision. But in fact, it's very difficult to do because we are so committed to putting the self at the center of experience. And what you just said, Michael, is right. The TSK vision, I think, is very deliberately presented in such a way that there's no room for the self at the center. There's a lot of room for exploring the self at the center, but if you're really trying to be accurate or true to what the vision is communicating, there is no good way to put the self at the center. And that's absolutely essential. It has to be that way, because otherwise we just wind up telling a story or living a story, you know, which we all do, of course. If we're interested in this vision, we go around saying, oh, I'm someone who studies and practices TSK, and that changes my approach to reality and my world and so on. That's okay. That's just another story. But it's not what TSK is about. And you're right that I think that's one well, I'm going to use my words now, not yours. I think one reason people have difficulty with TSK is that it doesn't give you that room. You know, it's most things you like to say, well, I'm changing. I'm becoming the one who, you know, the one who meditates, or the one who understands something more deeply, or the one who knows how to deal with my anxiety. TSK is not, in the end, really about any of that, because it's really challenging the story structure. So it doesn't let you, if you're very consistent about it, or radical about it, it does not let you change the story, because what you're doing is just sweeping out all the stories. And in the end, there's just this empty space. Well, that's a terrible way to say it.
The story that we're on a spiritual journey, right?
Yeah, including the story that we're on a spiritual journey. And that's one of the things that Rinpoche does talk about from time to time. Did somebody just say something? No? Okay. So that's a really fundamental point, actually, that we don't... The whole idea in TSK is to understand how stories operate, but not to rely on or inhabit or engage or affirm the truth of any particular story. And so if you're trying to sweep out all those story structures, what are you left with? Well, with space and time and knowledge. That's the claim that's made, and that's the claim, that's the approach that we're exploring. Okay, somebody else? Anybody else? When you're quiet, I don't know.
I've had some difficulty understanding zero versus zero less.
Yeah, okay, well, that's interesting. Zero less is exactly... It's another way of saying the same thing. If you identify zero, and there's a lot of different ways of thinking about zero, and Rinpoche presents it different ways in the different books. So I think you cannot always translate completely every discussion of zero from one book to another, or even one chapter to another. But especially if you're making the distinction between zero and zero-less, the point is that zero, when it shows up, has in fact showed up. So, you know, you draw that round circle, and that's zero. And it becomes the starting point for something. Even though it's the absence of everything, because it's zero, you know, it's not one, it's not two, and so on. It's nothing at all. But it's the starting point for a number system. At one point in one of the books, Rinpoche talks that way. And he says, okay, you draw an axis. You know, everybody learns this in studying mathematics. So you draw an axis, and it has a zero in the middle, and then there's there's the x-axis and the y-axis, and there's the place they meet. Well, zero already creates the possibility of that development along the x-axis and the y-axis, which is dimensionality. Exactly. In this case, it happens to be a kind of a two-dimensional mathematical reality or algebraic reality or whatever. But that's what zero does. It becomes the starting point for dimensionality. And zero-less is taking away that possibility. It's what's going on before zero. So zero-less, I think less is one of these little words or half words that Rinpoche likes to play with. Zero less means less than zero, but it also means something like occupying a different realm in which there are no dimensions. So, for instance, if you talk about a selfless act, right, that's an act in which the self plays no role. So zero-less dimensionality or zero-less space is space in which zero is not there, and that means there is no possibility of dimensionality taking form. Now, it does take form, but it only takes form as a story. And so, I don't know if Rinpoche uses this word, but you could talk about storyless. You know, you kind of want to tell the storyless story, or probably you don't want to do that, but you want to inhabit your stories in a storyless way, in the same way that you could talk about inhabiting them in a selfless way. So it's an important distinction. On the other hand, if you went around thinking of zeroless and zero as the same, it wouldn't confuse you too much until you got fairly far into the presentation. Except that you should always then at least be asking, well, why is there a talk about zeroless? Why not zero? So it's a good question. It's a good question to be asking yourself as you do the reading.
Is that related to the idea that space of the absence of presence is not the real space?
Yes, absolutely, exactly. Space, if you say, well, space is the same as zero, it's when there's nothing there, that's space as the absence of presence. And what we want to do is go to a more fundamental space in which there has never been any dimensionality. So that's zeroless space. Yes, that's what we're talking about.
I have a comment.
Yes.
It's some of my own experience, maybe other people feel the same way, but I go along with this and I get it, but at the same time, I feel like I keep waiting for some kind of reality to happen. You know, I mean, something that I know and is familiar and hopes for this. But
mm-hmm.
not this, there's this.
I think so.
I'm just expressing the discomfort in a way.
Right.
The joy at the same time, but it's disturbing.
Okay. Let me divide that up into two parts, because I think the first thing you said is really interesting too. It was kind of a preface. You said you're reading along and you kind of get it and appreciate it. Let me just comment on that for a moment. I do think that that's a kind of a characteristic reaction that people have if they are reading TSK and appreciating it and enjoying it. And then very often there's a second move, and you didn't quite say this, but I'm going to say it for you. I'm going to add on to what you said, because I do think this is an issue for people with TSK. Like, you read it and you get it, and you kind of have this sense of something opening up, something more spacious and free, but then it's very hard to make the transition into the rest of your life. You know, it's very hard to go somewhere with it. And that's not what you just said, but I'm just adding that on, because I do think that people feel a kind of a break between their study or practice or appreciation of TSK and what they're doing in the rest of their lives. And it's hard to say something about that quickly, but I guess what I would say is especially the way that we've been focusing on TSK, and the way that I think is probably the most effective, unless you're going to be on a retreat, which is a different story, but is to find ways to engage your life in a TSK way, you could say, so that the same structures are there, but there's this degree of freedom that you're rediscovering, and we're talking in space terms because of freedom is kind of a space quality, but you're involved in them, but you're not engaged in them in the same way, or you're not limited by them in the same way. So that's not really a comment on what you said, but it's such a fundamental point to how people work with TSK that I wanted to say something about it. Now what you actually said, I have to stop and think for a moment, is that you find yourself wanting to make something real. Is that fair enough? Is that a fair summary?
Real as I know it.
Right. Well, so the move in TSK, a kind of characteristic move, is to say, okay, what about that? I mean, you know, it's very good that you identify this discomfort and this wish to make something real. So now you have that available to look at. And you say, what would it be like to experience that discomfort in a zeroless way? You know, so you don't say, well, this is how far I can go, and then there's this kind of discomfort that comes in. You say, No, I'm whatever is happening to me, including this tough, this discomfort, I want to be able to bring to bear the TSK quality that would let me see that in a different light, that would let me see it with more freedom. Now, I'm not saying that's easy to do, but I do think that that's the right direction. Now, that's why we study this and practice it, and over a period of time, like, we begin to learn how to do that. You know, it's a little bit like when you're learning a language. I'm thinking right now of Tibetan, and actually not so much learning Tibetan, but just learning Tibetan script is what I'm thinking of. And when you first learn the letters, for a long time, you just, you know, you can kind of painfully read the letters when they're there on the page, and one at a time you figure out what they are. And then you go through this process where you begin to recognize words, and your eye takes in the word at a time, and then gradually your eye takes in the phrase. And eventually you find you can just read Tibetan. I'm not talking about understanding it, I'm just talking about being able to read the script in the same way that we read the Roman alphabet, you know, when we're reading English or German or Dutch or whatever we read, we don't think at all about the words, the letters. I mean, they're transparent to us. And in a certain sense, TSK is like that. You apply it, and you have to make an effort, and then gradually you come to a point where you're just reading TSK, as it were. You know, you're not reading the individual letters, you're reading the underlying meaning, which is, in this case, the TSK meaning. So, I'm not sure that's helpful, but let's say it is. Let's imagine that it is. What I wanted to do, I wanted to do two things at this point. I want to read the first chapter on the top of page 62, I mean the first paragraph on the top of page 62, and then I want to give you an assignment. So let's just look at that paragraph, or, if you have the book with you, but I'll read it. It's talking about how the story, essentially, makes things solid and translates zeroless space into dimensionality. We just talked about that. So that's what's going on. And then it says, this translation fundamentally rearranges appearance. As substance takes form, and you know, those words are all important. The verb is important. Substance takes form. It kind of shapes it and takes it and makes it and bakes it. As substance takes form, the zeroless gives way and becomes unthinkable. That's another word that's important to think about, think about carefully. It's kind of literally unthinkable. You know, within a story realm, you can't think the absence of a story. Identity moves to the center of what appears. Space becomes zero and disappears. So that's very interesting. Space was zeroless. Now it turns into zero, and it becomes nothing. Before space becomes zero, it's not nothing. It's not something, but it's also not nothing. And the moment it becomes nothing, then it disappears. Mind becomes zero and withdraws. And that withdrawal basically means you cannot investigate mind at the deepest level, because it becomes, well, I won't try to say any more about that. Knowledge also becomes zero, vanishing into the domain of subjectivity. So part of what goes on here is that our fundamental subjectivity, our fundamental sense of self, also becomes unavailable, becomes unthinkable. We can look at all sorts of things about the story we inhabit, which includes our sense of self. But the subjectivity dimension is the ground. You know, it's where you can't look. It's like when they say in Buddhist philosophy, the eye cannot see the eye. I mean the eye that sees, you know, the visual organ cannot see itself. It's kind of like that. Once knowledge has become subjectivity, or once knowledge is what the knower knows, then you cannot understand the knower or knowing. Conventional space and time emerge, together with objects that appear in space and time, and the subject that engages those objects, and not knowing prevails. So that's a nice summary paragraph. That's why I wanted to read it. So there's a couple of, I guess, a couple of assignments, or in terms of actually doing a practice, and I'll put a little more about this on the website. But in terms of doing a practice, I don't have a specific, like a really formal practice to give you. It's more to look at your experience as the outcome of or the expression of a story. Or if you want to say that in a way that is maybe easier to imagine and work with, try seeing your experience during the week as though you were a character in a novel or a play. That's all. Okay. You might even try narrating your story. And people usually, most people at some point have some experience with that. You say what you're doing while you're doing it. That you may not want to do it that way, but that would be one approach. But just imagine that you really are walking around in a movie as a character in a movie or a novel. And in that connection, I want to give you an actual real assignment, if you would like to do it. There is a movie, probably some of you have seen it, called Stranger Than Fiction. Who's seen that? Yes?
Yeah.
Couple, okay. Well, my suggestion is that we all get that video during the week and look at it, if you can figure out a way to, if you have a way to get hold of a video. It's about someone who finds that he's a character in a novel, basically, but he's also very real. So I'm not saying that it's a great TSK movie, but it at least is an interesting movie in terms of the kinds of things we've been looking at. And it's fun. It's a good movie, if you haven't seen it. So, that's my, apart from doing practice during the week, see if you can see that movie, and then we'll spend at least a few minutes in the phone call next week talking about it.